night, 35 suspected human traffickers arrested for trafficking over 200 individuals who were lured into Ghana with the promise of better life.
The victims were lured into the country by the suspects, ostensibly to give them lucrative jobs in Ghana. Unfortunately, when they came to Ghana, since there are no lucrative jobs existing, then they took them hostages and then they confined them at the Oyarefa estates, and then they were forced to go into cyber crimes and cyber crime related activities.
We'll tell you much more about this particular operation and tell you what the IOCO executive director has been planning together with the partners to get this particular issue arrested in Ghana here on Top Story, brought to you by Telecel, connecting energies and holding synthesized brain coil. Enjoy a holy sleep. Well, the Economic and Organized Crime Office, IOCO, has arrested 35 suspected human traffickers in a major operation targeting a syndicate accused of luring and exploiting over 200 individuals. The victims, mostly foreigners and from vulnerable backgrounds, were reportedly housed in Oyarefa under false promises of a better life and employment opportunities in Ghana. Acting Executive Director of IOCO, Abdul Bashiru, says the suspect operated a well-coordinated trafficking network that preyed on victims from various regions, including neighboring West African countries. The victims were allegedly deceived with offers of well-paying jobs, education, and improved living conditions. Listen to the Acting Executive Director of IOCO.
The operation was successfully, and 219 people were arrested at Kunsak Estates in Oyarefa. The suspects were lured into the country, the victims were lured into the country by the suspects, ostensibly to give them lucrative jobs in Ghana. Unfortunately, when they came to Ghana, since there are no lucrative jobs existing, then they took them hostages and then they confined them at the Oyarefa estates, and then they were forced to go into cyber crimes and cyber crime related activities. A number of laptops, personal effects, internet facilities, foodstuff, and other things were retrieved from them. Together with the Ghana Police Service and then the Army, they were brought to the Economic and Organized Crime Office, and then we have subjected them to some screening. The essence of the screening is to separate the victims from the suspects, to even separate the juveniles from the adults. And then we also want to know what type of criminal activities they are involved in. And whilst the screening was going on, the Nigerian High Commission visited us, and then he met with the victims and the suspects, and then he admonished them to cooperate with the office. At the moment, the screening is still going on, and then we are thinking that come what may, by tomorrow, we should be able to complete with the screening, and then bearing in unforeseen circumstances, it should be possible for us to link or maybe make arrangement to send the victims back to Nigeria to connect with their relatives. I think for purposes of the operation, the planning and everything, our counterpart with the CID, we had met at National Security, we planned together, we executed the exercise together. Indeed, going forward, the Economic and Organized Crime Office and that of the CID, we have mapped out strategies that the two of us, that is the CID and then IOCO, we should work more closely than before. And then this is just the beginning of one of the steps or one of the projects that we have embarked together. As we speak now, maybe Madam Lydia will talk about it. Similar operations are taking place somewhere, but we are trying to unite or join the operations together for one purpose, so that we can join resources, do a thorough investigations, and then share resources to reconnect the victims with their relatives. So I will just pause so that Madam Lydia will add one or two words, and then we will send you to meet the victims, and then maybe we take it from there. Thank you so much for coming.
So that's the acting executive director of IOCO. They're providing, you know, the background to this whole thing. But he's been giving more details with regards to this particular operation that has led to this particular arrest. Listen.
Number of trafficked victims and suspects. The operation was successfully and 219 people were arrested at Kunsak Estates in Oyarifa. The suspects were lured into the country, the victims were lured into the country by the suspects ostensibly to give them lucrative jobs in Ghana. Unfortunately, when they came to Ghana, since there are no lucrative jobs existing, then they took them hostages and then they confined them at the Oyarifa Estates, and then they were forced to go into cyber crimes and cyber crime related activities. A number of laptops, personal effects, internet facilities, foodstuff, and other things were retrieved from them. Together with the Ghana Police Service and then the Army, they were brought to the Economic and Organized Crime Office. And then we have subjected them to some screening. The essence of the screening is to separate the victims from the suspects, to even separate the juveniles from the adults. And then we also want to know what type of criminal activities they are involved in. And whilst the screening was going on, the Nigerian High Commission visited us, and then he met with the victims and the suspects. Then we admonish them to cooperate with the office. At the moment, the screening is still going on, and then we are thinking that come what may, by tomorrow, we should be able to complete with the screening. And then...
This is Top Story, brought to you by Telecel and Holy Insecticide Spray and Coil. Let's take you to where this particular, you know, presser happened, where details were given. My colleague Kenneth Jesse has been there for us and joins me on the telephone lines now. Kenneth, what more can you tell us about this particular bust?
Well, Brace, when you come to the Yoko headquarters, you see more than 200 people scattered there. They are being screened, being offered food. These are the people the Yoko boss was speaking about, where they engaged in a swoop at Oyarifa Estate and arrested them. And he's been giving a breakdown of the people. About 11 of them are aged 17 or below. And then you have about 7 of them being women, and then 212 of them are men. And if you see them, though, Brace, you can see that they have been in dire conditions, most of them looking very pale and very thin. I spoke to one of them who said that he was lured with a promise of a better life in Ghana. He's from Nigeria. When he came, he was told that he's going to get a better life. He's been indoors for the past 1 year, been confined to that particular place, not been allowed to go anywhere, and is offered just one meal per day. And this sentiment is shared across by all the people, almost all of them, who are there. A few of them, though, look quite healthy. And then the Yoko boss also said that most of them are foreigners, but there are few of them who are also Kenyans. So they are processing them, they're screening them. I mean, they have some NGOs there who are also looking at the situation. And of course, I quizzed him whether or not there's been a habit of them not prosecuting foreigners. We've heard the Interior Minister recently say that people who engage in galamsey who are not from Ghana should be sent back to where they come from. I asked him, is that going to be the case since most of these suspects, we're told, are foreigners? And he said that they're taking the case one at a time. So that one, they will address the press when the time comes. But the headquarters of Yoko is dotted with over 200 people who have been trafficked to Ghana.
I mean, details of these countries where they are coming from are being provided, right?
Yes, we have a majority of them coming from Nigeria. Some are coming from Niger, Burkina Faso. Within the West African sub-region, really, is where most of them are coming from. But looking at the composition, you can see that majority of them are coming from a neighboring Nigeria, and it's understandable because they are one of the few countries in West Africa who, like Ghana, also speak English. So it becomes a bit, you know, easier for them to come to a country which speaks a language that they understand and then get better opportunities or get offered better opportunities for them. But the Yoko boss also did indicate that what they found out was that they were engaging in cyber crime. Cyber crime, as in they were doing internet fraud, because when they seized all those equipment at the place, they seized computers and all that, which sought to suggest that that is what they had been recruited to do.
Well, you know, earlier this week, there was similar bust in Subri Forest Reserve, where we understand a community had sprung up there, majority of whom were girls who had been trafficked into the country. Did it have any relations to do with this particular one?
The Yoko boss said no, it didn't have any relation with this one, but he did indicate that the seven women who were part of this 219 people could possibly have been trafficked here to engage in prostitution. But with the isolated case that you mentioned, there is no linkage as of now that it has anything to do with this. But this is also the biggest swoop that they've had. This is the biggest single swoop that they've had, that they've arrested over 200 people, which includes the victims and the suspects in this human trafficking scandal. And as you rightly mentioned, they've been collaborating with the CID, the Ghana Police Service, and all that to ensure that these victims are properly screened, because most of them do not have documentation. So it's going to take a bit of time for them to really know where this one is from, whether they are from Ghana or from outside Ghana, and see if they can send them back to their countries of origin. But as we speak now, he also mentioned that they have been collaborating with the Nigerian High Commission in Ghana, because I mentioned earlier that most of these victims are from Nigeria. So they are collaborating with the Nigerian High Commission in Ghana to try and see if they can send back the Nigerians who are amongst them. And then, of course, going forward, they'll be collaborating with the embassies and high commissions of the various countries that these victims are coming from.
Okay, grateful to you. That's my colleague Kenneth Jesse. But joining me on the phone lines now is the acting executive director of IOKO, Abdul Bashiru. Grateful to you, sir, for joining us here. Now, from the people you've arrested, does it include the people we understand are brought into the country to engage in, prostitution in this country?
Hello?
Mr. Bashiru.
Yes.
I wanted to understand whether your intel is pointing to the fact that this could possibly be part of the syndicate to bring in women to engage in prostitution in Ghana.
Not exactly, because the number of women involved are quite few. I think the women are seven. So seven out of 219, you can't conclude that the women were brought for sex purposes.
So what is this pointing to, that we have about 200 people trafficked into Ghana?
Normally, the traffickers will lure their unsuspecting suspects or victims, that is, with some prospects of jobs or some sense of security or education. So once these people fall into it, then they succeed in bringing them to Ghana or other places where they want to carry out such enterprises. So from what we have gathered so far, many of them are into this cyber crime and cyber crime related. Indeed, from what we gathered, they are more or less into this romance scams, and then some of them to using the same medium to lure other unsuspecting victims to come and join them.
But so why is it so easy for these people to get into the country? Don't we have measures at the borderlines where we could probably get these issues arrested even before they become entrenched in Ghana?
Many of them use unapproved routes. because from the screening, it's clear that many of them don't have any document with them. And ideally, somebody traveling through our borders, at least a person would have gone through one or two checks, and then many of these issues will be detected. Maybe we just don't know, but it could also be that there isn't either no checks were done, or maybe there could be some compromises along the way.
Do we know how widespread this is in Ghana?
It is quite widespread. I think this is about our fourth major operation that we have done.
This year?
And our counterparts, the Ghana Police Service, CID, have also done similar exercises.
As in this year and throughout Ghana? The four major exercises you've done, is it this year alone?
No, not this year alone.
Okay. So what measures are we putting in place to try and arrest this situation?
To the extent that people in other places will want greener pastures, we may just resort to maybe public education and sensitization in both their home countries and then in Ghana in particular. So when this issue came up, we contacted the Nigerian High Commission here. They have come and then they have explained a lot of things to them that there is no greener pasture anywhere, even in the advanced countries. And they even admonished them about some social intervention policies that the current Nigerian government has embarked on. And then we think that this thing, if the people are well sensitized and educated, especially the youth, to understand that there is no greener pasture anywhere and that their destiny is in their hands and that with some guidance and then maybe the support of the state, then they can make meaningful life in their home countries, I think it will help. In Ghana here too, then the thing, as we embark on this exercise with Ghana Police Service and the National Security, if we are able to sustain it and then also create awareness in particular that any property owner that let out a property to search criminals to undertake criminal activities, as we have just established, the person is likely to lose the property if we are harsh on them. After all, that is in the commission of crimes, anybody who aided and abetted a crime, whether with a vehicle, a house, or anything, is as guilty as the one who committed the offense. So if people start losing their assets, properties that they have let out for prostitution, cybercrime, among other things, if they start losing their properties, we think that it will send signals that the decent people will not want to lose their properties or people will not want to be seen to be committing crimes. But I must also emphasize that Yoko, we have started some public education and sensitization. We think that going forward, this other particular aspect or area should be one of the areas that we should sensitize the public on. On cybercrime, you will recall that the National Crime Agency of UK, they have partnered us and then we launched a anti-cybercrime campaign and then we try to educate the public. We just think that once we have started, if we are able to sustain it, maybe it will minimize the influx or the effects of such people into the country.
Is Ghana becoming a fertile ground for these crimes to fester? And that's why, they are coming into this country to do what they do?
I wouldn't be able to say so. But during the interviews that we do conduct involving suspects, the issues that come up are that there is in Ghana, our internet is quite stable. Then our electricity is also quite reliable, and that when they are arrested, to our issues with respect to fair trial, respect for people's fundamental human rights are higher than maybe many of the places that the suspects are arrested. So it's like in Ghana, every offense or every crime is bailable. And then the moment somebody is detained for more than 48 hours, you see lawyers and other people coming. So the combination of these factors suggests that criminals will prefer Ghana to other places where they think that maybe there may be some amount of abuses of their fundamental human rights. That is not to say that maybe Ghana is more developed or advanced in terms of ICT, internet, and then electricity than Nigeria. But this is just what, during the course of our interviews or investigations, some of them suggested.
Okay. All right. But please stay with me. Let me bring in Farouk Al-Wahab. He is an international diplomatic consultant to look at the what impact this could have on our diplomatic relations. Wahab, I'm grateful to you for joining us here. Now, we know that some countries have been blacklisted by other countries, European and American countries, for these cybercrime activities. How can we, Ghana, handle this so that we don't get to the level where we'll be blacklisted for activities that are not caused by our indigenes, but by our foreign brothers and sisters?
Good evening, and then hello to your cherished listeners. Yes, every country has this kind of difficulties or problems ongoing on the whole sub-region, West Africa. For that matter, Ghana becoming a hub, and we've been blacklisted. We've been blacklisted before, or noted to be a cybercrime destination in West Africa. Ghana, Cote d'Ivoire, and then Nigeria, of course, predominantly in the Central African Republic, was Cameroon, and some countries in Africa are notable of this kind of crimes. But indeed, the softness of it is the fact that it's not today that Ghana established even the cybercrime unit of the Ghana Police Service. We have it for the last 10 years. We should rather ask how many people have either been arrested, prosecuted, jailed over cybercrime. Virtually none. The reason being that we should ask of our police system, the prosecution system, and then the judiciary system, the court, and then the end point of the cases when the cybercrime or the offenders are being, the perpetrators are being arrested. Out of that, that is giving a kind of a green light. Out of that, that is actually amplifying the increasing of the cybercrime activists moving from other parts of West Africa or descending down to Ghana. Because in La Côte d'Ivoire, where somebody is arrested, where most Nigerians were arrested, for instance, instantly they take them to Yapougon. The Cote d'Ivoire court system does not allow the human rights, and then we should blame ourselves that when there is an issue, our lawyers, quickly, they will come in. The human rights, it will come in. The sheriffs will come in. The 48 hours, which my brother rightly said, is applicable. And for that matter, they are charged and billed. The other thing is adjournment. Who is a complainant? No complainant. The case is dismissed. This had been the system which is ongoing, thereby making everybody within the ECOWAS region. Of course, light, and then these are some of the illustrations or the considerations. Nevertheless, it's the softness of people having easy access, an easy way to be bailed out or go out. It is not yesterday, over the last 15, 20 years. But I also want to differ by saying that, yes, our brothers, we should not be concentrating that our brothers from the other region, the ECOWAS sub-region, it is not true. Ghanaians now, if ECOWAS member nations and nationals are here, certainly Ghanaians are more than them. They came to teach them. They came to bring them up to that kind of things that we're not used to. At this point, one can confirm validly that the Ghanaians are more, certainly. We are more. This is our country. We are more than them. So they come and have friendship with these boys, or they identify their hideouts. And indeed, there are Ghanaians who are also called masters. that they hire accommodation in the name of guardian. He made mention of the landlords and they will lose their properties. It is, you and I know that it is not possible. Because under a Ghanaian law, normal laws, even when there's a judgment to take possession of somebody's property, even in drug-related cases, it will not happen today, not tomorrow, not the next year.
So how can we deal with it then?
Dealing with it has to do with, one, immigration has not taken into consideration of knowing how many and how people do come in. We have the ECOWAS protocols of right to live, right of movement, permits to live, and then permits to work, etc. But then it is also very normal that in modern day that we have scanning system, etc. People traveling through the country, through our borders, whichever means. Well, when they are arrested or when they are entering to the country, right to stay is 3 months for ECOWAS member country, which is 90 days. After the expiration, if you go to countries like even Zambia, etc., the moment you enter in, if even it's a southern state, South African country, member nation, they take your data having entered. After the 3 months, they know or they start looking for you. Botswana, you can't do that. They will fish you out. Namibia, you can't do that. They will fish you out. How well is the immigration? That is the bottom line.
But Yokobos just told us that some of them come through unapproved routes. That was the challenge.
It is like that. Don't forget that you and I, Ghanaians, have entered UK through unapproved routes. Ghanaians entered Germany, unapproved route. Ghanaians entered Switzerland, unapproved route. So that is not a news. It happens everywhere. Ghanaians are in America, all way without boarding a flight through Mexico, they enter. It is also unapproved route. Does that one validify or validate their living? Answer is no. Therefore, you have to regularize. If they've entered through unapproved route, there are places where we know. Ghana Migration know. Ghana Police Service know. These guys don't live in single rooms. They live in 20, 30, 40. Where are the areas? Kaswa, Medina. Ghana Police Service is on top of all this. They know where they hide out. They know where they are. So if we continue to protect them and we sit back on joint news like I'm doing and complain, whereas we know the hideout of these people, whereas we know the judicial system is not favoring us, then what are we talking about? What about the Ghanaians that are with them? We know where they are. So it is a matter of the country, our preparedness. The question is, do we want to solve this problem? Yoko, how many commissions, how many security agencies that we do have, including the MIs, the military intelligence, the CIDs, all of them, they collaborate, they know how to fight, fight this issue. They know.
Okay, I'm grateful to you for the insight you've shared on the show today. But let me just wrap up with you, Mr. Bashiru. He mentions places that you are, these people are probably, you are aware. You are of all these places, and what are you doing to get them, to deal with them? Mr. Bashiru, I'm trying to find out from you if you are aware of all of these places that Al Wahab mentions.
You see, it's easy to mention that maybe human trafficking or hoarding or hostage is taking place in Kaswa or wherever. When you get to Kaswa, which part of Kaswa are you going? So it's easy to presume that, or maybe with some basis to say that, because of high numbers of certain populations in certain areas, there is a possibility that certain type of crimes are taking place there. I'm not disputing that. But the point is that, listen, if you even go to Kaswa, if you don't have intel or you don't have direct information that point to a particular place, you can't just go and be searching into people's homes to see whether they are harboring maybe victims of cyber crimes or prostitution, among other things.
All right.
So to that extent, yes, he has mentioned them, but you and I, if we go to Kaswa today, which aspect or which house in Kaswa are we going?
Okay, all right. So you don't know of these hideouts?
Yes, so basically it all requires some intelligence or some information.
Okay, all right, I'm grateful to you.
We are just saying, yes, I think the way forward is for us to sensitize the landlords and even sensitize the neighbors.
I'm grateful to you. Abdul Bashir is the executive director of IOKO, and this has been Top Story. Up next is Newsnight.